My guest at this time is Jonathan Scruggs of the Alliance Defending Freedom. He joined us back in May to share the story of his clients who were challenging a Phoenix, Arizona ordinance that forbids businesses from denying service for any event based on sincerely held religious beliefs or even publicizing beliefs that could be considered offensive to protected classes of people. John is here to give us an update on this case as the fight by the owners of the Brush and Nib Studio goes on. And John, thanks very much for being with us.
No, thanks so much for having me on.
When we spoke with you a few months ago, your clients were pursuing what's called a pre-enforcement suit against the city ordinance, meaning they weren't actually accused of violating it, but they wanted to challenge it so they wouldn't have to worry about it. And at that time, we were waiting for a response from the city, and eventually this went to court. So bring our listeners up to date on what's happened since then.
Sure. So we filed a lawsuit, and the city is fully defending its law, saying that it can require artists to create artwork contrary to their religious beliefs. And just recently, we got a ruling from the lower court, and the court agreed, unfortunately, with the city. And a pretty strange decision, I think, because essentially the logic of the court was that when our clients create paintings and write words on their artwork, that they're not expressing any merit, any message at all, that it's not speech at all. And so that's pretty strange because anytime, for example, someone receives a wedding invitation, our clients create beautiful wedding invitations with calligraphy and paintings on it. I'm not sure about you, but anytime I receive a wedding invitation, usually it's conveying some type of message because there are words on it and there are paintings. So that's a pretty strange result. And so we think that's a wrong result, and it's clearly wrong. So we've already appealed that decision to the appellate court of Arizona, and that's the next step in this process.
How did the city defend this ordinance? Go into more detail about that. Obviously, they believe it is constitutional. Your argument, of course, is that this completely restricts speech, not only with what they're being forced to create, but even being able to post beliefs that might be offensive, depending on who walks in the door that day.
Exactly. I think the city has a few arguments that are actually pretty scary, taken to their logical conclusion. One argument is our clients are not speaking at all, that even though they're writing words and creating artwork, that none of that conveys messages, that it's just conduct that the city can regulate, just like if our clients were, you know, making a sandwich and selling it. And that's just not true. Words do express messages. But another disturbing argument is that it's essentially no big deal when our clients have to celebrate same-sex wedding ceremonies because all our clients have to do is just write words down. That it's, you know, you just have to write one word, not the other, and therefore you're not being burdened at all. Well, of course, that's pretty much nonsense. You know, when you have to affirm a belief, a ritual, an idea that you don't believe in, that really goes to the core of what freedom is. And that's why we feel pretty confident on appeal, is these are some kind of common sense arguments. Arguments like words convey messages, you know, arguments like a court shouldn't decide which religious beliefs are important to a religious observer. That should be up to the person of the faith to decide. So we feel really confident on appeal that we're going to win these and protect the right of not just these two young artists, but the right of artists everywhere to believe and to speak and to create in accordance with their beliefs.
Talk a little bit more about the second half of the ordinance, and that's the fact that they can't even post things on the wall of their shop or elsewhere where people could potentially be offended. How did the city defend that? How did the court interpret that in defense of the city?
Well, yeah, that's the second part of the law. It's a part of the law that basically says that our clients cannot issue any communication, any type of communication that implies that someone is unwelcome or not solicited or undesirable, language that is very broad and very vague and could apply to anything. So almost anything can make someone feel unwelcome. And again, the court's basic logic is, well, you can do that because you're not speaking. When you put up things on your website, when you say you can't do something, when you're using words on your invitations, that's not protected speech at all. And again, that just doesn't make much sense, right? Words convey messages. words convey ideas. So it's this type of logic that I think that really is restricting the rights of artists and writers and speakers everywhere. If we can't put things on, if businesses and individuals can't put things up on their websites to express their beliefs, then where can they put it? So it's really a strong attack on religious and expressive freedoms in our country.
So creating things for people that you have a moral or spiritual conflict with is not speech, but you can also have no speech rights with expressing your own beliefs.
Exactly. It's, you know, you can't win here, you can't win there. You can't, you have to be forced to forced to convey messages you don't want to convey, and you can't convey the messages that you do want to convey. So you're simultaneously being silenced and being compelled to speak against your beliefs. And so this double-prong attack on religious freedom and free speech really should strike a note of fear amongst all artists. Because if these two artists can't do that, in theory that should mean other artists can't either, and other writers and other speakers can't. And that's a scary notion that the government gets to decide what's legitimate, what's not, what's permissible and what's not.
John, as you mentioned earlier, this heads now to the Arizona Appeals Court. When is the argument there, and what happens after that if that court rules like the first one did?
Well, our basic arguments are going to be the same, and I'll give you an example. One of the reasons why we feel confident, in 2012, just 4 years ago, the Arizona Supreme Court explicitly said that a tattoo parlor, for example, engages in expression when it puts words and images on, when it tattoos that on somebody. Now, this is just common sense. If that is speech, if being tattooed with images and words is speech, certainly then what our clients do when they write down on a piece of paper with words or when they put it on their website, that has to be speech too. So in light of that decision, this lower court ruling has to be wrong, and that's what we're going to bring to the Arizona Appellate Court. Continue to emphasize that this is just common sense. Words convey messages. Art is speech. It conveys ideas and emotions. So that's the argument that we're going to bring, and the timeline looks like, you know, within the next few months, we'll be briefing this decision and hopefully have a ruling from the Arizona Appellate Court in the next few months. And if the Arizona Appellate Court disagrees with us, then that gives us the opportunity to appeal to the Arizona Supreme Court.
And we'll be following the case from here as well. John, thanks very much for your time today.
Great. Thank you so much.
Jonathan Scruggs, legal counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.